Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. I'm Diana Isaacs, joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And as promised, we are getting back to the 2026 ADA Standards of Care. So previously, we have discussed technology, and we haven't yet discussed therapy updates. So that is what we want to do today. And there have been so many, so we'll see what we get through. So one that I want to highlight that I am really excited about, because it was something that I was wondering if they were going to add to 2025, and it wasn't exactly added in the algorithm, but this year it has been. And so what that is regarding heart failure. So in heart failure, they actually went ahead and in the, you know, typically for heart failure in the pharmacologic approaches, this is section 9, they recommend SGLT2 inhibitors. And that is indeed still the case, that SGLT2 inhibitors with proven heart failure benefit in current or prior symptoms of heart failure with reduced ejection or preserved ejection fraction. But then below that, this is where they've added using an SGLT2 inhibitor and or either a dual GIP-GLP-1 receptor agonist or a GLP-1 receptor agonist with proven benefit in symptomatic heart failure with preserved ejection fraction and obesity. So why is the language this way? So it's because SGLT2 inhibitors, yes, we have known for a long time, great benefits in heart failure. Several of them are approved for heart failure, irrespective of diabetes. But what is newer is that both semaglutide and tirzepatide have shown positive data for people with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction and obesity. And so I'm thrilled, because I feel like when it's added to the algorithm, then people are like, oh, yeah, like, let me look into this. So last year there was a recommendation, but it wasn't in the algorithm. And so I'm very happy about this. Natalie, what do you think?
I absolutely agree with you, right? There's a difference between a recommendation and added to the algorithm, because most of us, when we're looking for something, we're not reading the full ADA guidelines cover to cover, are we? We're pulling up the app, we're looking at the algorithm, and we see those medications, and it says to me, let's go, this is what I should be doing right now. So I think it will change clinical behavior, and that's important.
Super important. So yeah, I feel like that is practice changing.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Natalie, what else was new that you liked?
A couple of things, right? Recommendation 9.11, chapter 9, section 11, right? That's how we do this, right? Was updated to include recommendations for adults with type 2 and advanced CKD. So a eGFR of less than 30. Ready for this? GLP-1 RAs are preferred for glycemic management due to lower risk of hypoglycemia and proven cardiovascular benefit. Individuals on dialysis, you can initiate it and you can continue it. So this is really nice because, you know, as people get, you know, approach dialysis, we all go, okay, you got to have insulin, you got to have insulin, you got to have insulin. So this is telling us, right, that this is an option, and it feels good to have that at my back, I guess, is what I would say, right? When I go into a room, is this appropriate? And the recommendation is yes.
Yeah, I think this is really important, because also, so when eGFR gets that low, yes, SGLT2 inhibitors are still beneficial for kidney function, but when it comes to glucose lowering, the GLP-1 drug is going to be what's effective at that point. And then I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot of hesitancy as people approach dialysis or are on dialysis of what therapies can we use. And because of that, the default is usually insulin, when really this is going to be a much safer medication to use and likely also just going to be a lot easier to use and less risk of hypoglycemia. So a recommendation like this will give people the confidence to use it in practice. I think it's very significant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, what else? So there's, I feel like all of my answers, the things I was like wanted changed last year have been changed. So there's this really nice in the glycemic targets. So section 6, there's this very, very nice figure that talks about how you modify the A1C goals based on kind of what, you know, someone's, you know, if they're healthy and they're young versus as they get older or they have more complex conditions or they get a lot older and they may have limited life expectancy. And so it goes from A1C goals of less than 6.5% all the way to maybe you just don't have an A1C goal. You're just trying to prevent symptomatic hyper or hypoglycemia. But what they added this year is the time in range underneath it. And I remember being like, wait a second, we should not be so A1C centric. So I'm thrilled that they included the corresponding time in range targets from CGM, which I think also encourages use of CGM in these different populations. So I'm like just so happy that that was added in there.
Yes, thrilled, right? It normalizes the use of CGM, right? And again, what do we also think about? You know, our challenge, at least in my practice, is for a lot of people who are seen in primary care and prescribed a CGM before they come and see us, when I show them the download, no, I've never seen that before, right? This tells a provider, no matter who you are, where you practice, that the time and range goal for most adults is greater than 70%. Well, if you've never looked at the download, you don't know that if they're there or not, right? So this might encourage you to learn what a download looks like and really improve that discussion with the person sitting in front of you, right? I mean, we love CGM and we love the AGP report because you can say things like, well, what do you do on Thursdays? Oh, Thursday's bowling and beer night. Yeah, what else? Pizza. Okay, I see a spike. You know, like this is that conversation that opens up. I see, what do you do on Sundays? Oh, I'm out all day. I go with my friends. I see some lows. Yes, you do. So then I can actually adjust medication on those days, right? What about Tuesdays? Tuesdays I do this. Oh, I can see you go walk with the hiking club. You know, those kinds of conversations, right? But I don't know that if I don't ever look at the data. I say, oh, your A1C is 7.8. Here's some more Lantus or some more whatever, or eat less carbohydrate, right? It's these generic kind of throw out things that happen that, you know, you're basing it on nothing, right? So this tells someone, look at the download, even just the first page, and we will help get you there, right? So I'm thrilled at this graph. They did an excellent job. It's very simple, and that's amazing.
Right. Totally agree. All right, what else?
So I think the modifying factors in this graph were really nice too. How long is the diabetes? How old are you getting, right? And so, and towards end of life, what we want, I mean, we want to think about this, right? Why do we say there is no goal, right? But we don't want the person so high that they end up with, you know, skin infections or UTIs or other things that can affect it, right? We don't want thirst. We don't want, but there really is, we want to maintain that person's quality of life and we can let them run a little bit higher safely. So I think that is, I think that's the way we close that section, right? Is that we can do that, right? I would like to take a step back though with GLP-1s. We've talked about GLP-1s. I don't know. We just keep talking about them, right? Because there's so many benefits. The one thing I would love to add this year, for the first time ever, the ADA has said, you know, someone with type 1 diabetes with a BMI greater than 30, and no, we don't love BMI, but at least it's something, right? We're using it still. You should probably be offered a GLP-1. What? I love it. Diana, how do you feel when you saw those words?
I am so happy. I mean, we know these therapies work very well for people with type 1 diabetes. We are all doing it, but we're having to do crazy things like label people with type 1 and type 2, which is like so not ideal because then people are confused when they see them. Like, why do you have both of these? Which one do you have? So let's just cover these and use these in people with type 1 diabetes. I'm very happy to see that. And I think the literature, the clinical trial data is growing. It continues to grow. And hopefully we'll see this will lead to more coverage, improved coverage in type 1 diabetes.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, ultimately, what do we really want? What we really want is someone with diabetes, whether they have type 1 or type 2, to be able to have access to a GLP-1, because there are people with diabetes that, I don't know, have a BMI of 29.5, but they're not going to be able to get it, right? So there are some concerns about it, right? Including, okay, where do we stop? How do we stop? Because this is really dealing with the weight. It's not really dealing with the other challenges, right? So my concern about it is that it's not perfect, But we have to always say we have to start somewhere, right? And that start somewhere is here. So that's really important to me. You know, it's not mentioning what's most important, which is the cardiovascular risk reduction. And so why not? Why ADA? Why aren't you doing? Because there isn't data yet, because they haven't done the studies show, you know, increased time in range, weight reduction, insulin, you know, a reduction in insulin, overall insulin use, right? People love it. They feel better on it. Their fluctuations are down. It's amazing. But there is no cardiovascular data. So as a person with a BMI of 28 or 26, we don't have data. So what that guideline is actually talking about is the weight reduction, not about anything about the person with type 1 and cardiovascular risk. And so we just have to be patient because we can't make guidelines based on whims. And I respect the ADA for this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be challenging to get cardiovascular outcome data for type 1 diabetes, because to power those types of trials, you need to have a really large number of people. And in general, it's harder. I mean, there are less people with type 1 compared to type 2. And I think it's going to be challenging. Now, what probably will be easier to do as we get more and more people with type 1 using these is to gather some retrospective real world data. And I suspect we'll see improved cardiovascular outcomes. And while that's not as high quality as a randomized controlled trial, I think, you know, that would add kind of to the evidence bank that would hopefully just lead to further use. I mean, I can't imagine why it wouldn't be beneficial. Like, people with type 1 also have increased cardiovascular risk. Many people have kidney disease with type 1, and that further increases your cardiovascular risk. So it's like, intuitively, it makes so much sense. But, you know, obviously, to make recommendations, you need to see data.
Yep. I absolutely agree with that one, too. Yep.
Yeah. And so since we're still on this like whole GLP-1 thing, I think that, you know, also added really in 2025 was MASH and MASLD and kind of the use of GLP-1s. But I think that is something that's further been emphasized this year. Newer recommendations about using GLP-1 type of therapies that have shown benefit for MASH or MASLD. And I think that is, you know, that is becoming an increased emphasis on our whole kind of comprehensive evaluation. And truly, like, even just like 3 years ago, I don't think this is something we really looked at. Like, we just didn't think about it. And now we do have two FDA approved therapies. We have resmetirom, and then we also have semaglutide is Wegovy. And I think we'll start to see just more being done in this space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So should we touch real quick on section 11 for kidney protection?
Yeah,
because there's some major changes there, right? Section 11, expanding kidney protection strategies through frequent monitoring, updated therapy landscape, and guidance for advanced CKD, right? So where are we, right? Updates included use of SGLT2 inhibitors, GLP-1 RAs, and some clearer safety guidelines for advanced CKD and pregnancy event, right? So kidney function monitoring recommendation now clarifies the frequency of kidney assessment, annual UACR and EGFR screening for most people with diabetes, and risk-based monitoring 1 to 4 times a year, depending on where they are and how quickly they're falling or changing, right? Based on CKD stage and albuminuria category. 11.5 blood pressure guidance, setting a goal of less than 130 over 80. I mean, I'm like, sit there. We got to do it again. I got to see you were high last time. You were high at primary care. Don't keep telling me you're high, right? I'm okay. I'm normal at home. Send me some blood pressures. I want to see them. Upload them to your chart. You know, we're linking blood pressure machine, you know, so that I actually see real numbers, because blood pressure doesn't hurt anyone. It doesn't feel bad, right? So they're like, it's fine. It's fine. 189 over 92. It's fine. It's fine. No, it's not fine, right? So now I've got the diabetes and the kidney disease working against your kidneys, your eyes, your, you know, this is tough, right? But that 130 over 80 or less, and encouraging 120 when safely achievable. So, you know, do you want to talk a little bit about the therapeutic guidance, Diana?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they continue, they have a very nice chart in the section. And in addition to the use of SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 receptor agonists, because also we saw, you know, semaglutide with the FLOW trial gained that indication as well. And then other GLP-1s have evidence as secondary outcomes, but they also highlight the use of non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor agonists, so basically finerenone. And I like how they do split it up with type 1 and type 2. I mean, there's a lot of overlap, but they highlight kind of areas where are key to people with type 1. And I think it's important that both are emphasized. So it's always great to see that both are in that treatment algorithm.
Right. And what is not in the treatment algorithm is the use of SGLT2s with people with type 1 because of the concern of that increased risk of DKA, right? Even euglycemic DKA. So, you know, it is a split screen, right? So individuals type 2 only, all individuals type 1 and type 2. So, you know, I love this graph because it starts with eat healthy, physical activity, smoking cessation, and weight management, right? And then reassessing every 3 to 6 months. Where are we? Is it helping? What are we doing? I think when you have lots of words and someone needs to look at something quickly as a clinician who isn't in this like you and I are every day, you can glance at this and say, okay, SGLT2, initiative GFR is greater than 20, continue until a dialysis or transplant, go, next step, and really be able to quickly do it and get back into the room. You know, or pull it up and show, I could use this to talk to some of the people that I see every day. And that's that they've done a really nice job of including, honestly, in the last few years, even better graphics to help explain where we are and where we're flowing to.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as a reminder for our listeners, there's also the abridged version really geared for primary care providers. Because the original is like 370 plus pages. It's a lot. Natalie and I do try to read through all of it.
Yes, we do. Right. Yes.
So, and I know Natalie's already read through all of it. But we do. And then also there is an app as well. So I think these are really
just going to say that, right? Yeah. Hit the app on your phone, open it up, right? Like, you know, and you can. It will even tell you when there's updates made to the standards because it is a living document. So if something was wrong, if they said something another study comes out and things are changed and we're going to change things in the middle of the year, come July, whatever, you'll see an update is available and you'll get those updates, which is really nice. But the app is really, you can click on what you need, find it quickly. It's abridged, obviously, because it's in an app. It's lovely. All of our students here have downloaded it. We make them open it up. So what would you make a decision on next? Where's the guideline? How do you do this? Because guidelines help us focus our practice and really not miss something. So I'm thrilled you can do it in multiple different ways.
Definitely. Well, I think we've covered a lot. There is more to cover, but hopefully, you know, this is a good start. Some of the high level things that we're really excited about. And with that, we really thank you for tuning in. And that wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.